During this time, it's more important than ever to support our friends and neighbors in the restaurant industry. Restaurant Workers Community Foundation has set up a national COVID-19 crisis relief fund. The money they raise will provide direct relief to individual restaurant workers, support other nonprofits serving restaurant workers in crisis, and offer zero-interest loans for restaurants to get back up and running. Visit restaurantworkerscf.org to donate today. And if you need a little extra motivation, you can DM your $20 donation to RWCF's co-founder, John DeBerry, on Twitter, and he'll give you directions for making a signature quarantine cocktail. Donate now at restaurantworkerscf.org.
All right. Hello, this is Lisa Held, and you're listening to The Farm Report, a Heritage Radio Network show about the people, processes, and policies that shape how food is produced today. First, just another reminder that all of us at Heritage are recording our shows remotely, so if the audio quality is a little less than perfect, I apologize. Like everyone at this moment in time, we're making things work while staying far apart. But we are more committed than ever to bringing you important food stories. For now, at The Farm Report, I am continuing our coverage of how farmers and the larger food system are faring in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. So with that in mind, today I have Christopher Wayne, who works for Grow NYC as the Director of Farmer Assistance. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you, and listeners should know that we have been going through major troubleshooting to make this recording happen, and I think it's just like indicative of this new reality we're all living in where, you know, we're trying to make things work, we're trying to speak differently, interact differently, and it's just everything is a little bit trickier, and we're kind of figuring it all out on the fly, you know? And I know that this is a really stressful time for Grow NYC, so I appreciate you making the time to chat with me.
My pleasure.
So let's start with markets. So there's a lot of uncertainty across the country right now from city to city about whether farmers markets will stay open or if they'll be shut down. And it's sort of being left up to states and local authorities, which has kind of led to a patchwork of decision-making around the country. At this point, New York City is the center, really, of the coronavirus outbreak in the U.S. Can you tell us what the current state of things are in terms of the city's green markets?
Sure. So we were deemed an essential service by Governor Cuomo early on in this process. And in doing so, the state sent out clear guidance that farmers markets were considered essential across the state and specifically in New York City. So we have been operating under that guidance and continue to run our green markets here in New York City. Generally, we've been able to keep a significant portion of our markets open. In some cases, which I'm happy to elaborate on, we've had to make some changes. But broadly, the markets that the New York City consumer would expect to see in March and April are open and will continue to remain open as long as our essential service status remains. And we're very proud of that. Very happy to be in a position where we can continue to provide fresh food from local farms to New York City residents.
Yeah, absolutely. And are you seeing increased traffic at markets, like the way that, you know, obviously grocery stores right now are selling out of a lot of things? Are more people also going to local markets?
You know, I think it's kind of an ever-changing and ever-moving target. At the very beginning of this, we did see increased foot traffic at our market. I think as we move towards shelter in place in New York City and kind of the slow but steady move towards stay at home, people recognized a need to stock up. And I think farmers markets, similar to grocery stores and other food retailers, were slammed. And some of those early first few weeks, we certainly had increased sales at our markets. And I would say that our protein vendors and our grains and some of our other non-perishable goods certainly saw significant increases in sales moving forward. But over the past couple of weeks, that's changed, and I think folks are really heeding the advice of the governor and the mayor to stay in place unless they have to. So only when it's essential to be shopping, and that certainly resulted in a change to how people are shopping and how often they're going out. And in certain cases, we've seen that be reflective in less sales, but in other cases, sales remain up. So it's kind of a mixed bag. Certainly that heavy rush at the top. And now we see folks heeding the advice, flattening the curve, and only coming out when it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And are a lot of the farmers at the markets, are you seeing them change the way they're selling at all to accommodate shoppers? Like, for instance, I think I saw one Union Square Green Market farmer who was letting people order in advance and just come pick things up, sort of just to kind of minimize like the interaction at the market. Is that something that a lot of people are doing?
Yeah, we work for an organization that is full of very smart, very nimble, very committed people. And very early on in this process, we started to put together some, guidance for our farmers on ways that we felt that we could limit exposure to COVID-19 at farmers markets, and got out guidance to our farmers very early on about ways that they could reorient themselves, practices that they could employ at the markets. That would limit additional exposure. And those are things like very early setting a rule that only producers and their staff can handle products at market. So customers can't touch products until after they've purchased them. And the stand setup can discourage any touching, right? So you can set up your stand in a way that has an additional 6-foot table out front. So people can't lean into a stand and grab something. You can have a protective piece of tape or cord to block the market stands. And you can set up your cash register in the front and your products behind you, and you become like one of the old 1930s shopkeepers where you go out and pick out every item for folks that way. And people have done that, and it's been working really effectively at market. We see very little, if any, touching of product at markets going forward. From our operational perspective, we've also done things like where possible, expanded the footprint of the total market that we're in. And in doing so, spreading farm businesses, individual market stalls and stands, spreading them out, adding 6, 10, some places even more space in between those individual stands so that there's no kind of line cluster, and that that people are not encouraged to kind of meet in groups or anything in those areas. But there's far more space broadly in the markets where we can, for people to shop and move around with the advised, 6 feet of social distancing. That way, there's no sampling at markets anymore. Producers must wear protective gloves while they're at market and be sanitizing their stands regularly. We're adding and have added sanitizing stations, especially at some of our larger markets, for shoppers to be able to quickly sanitize while they're at market. And look, we're telling people the same thing that the CDC is. If you're feeling sick in any way, stay home. If you have any symptoms, call out of market. And And so far, those guidelines have led to what we feel are incredibly effective and safe places for people to be shopping. It's just been a wonderful response from our shopper community as well. I mean, people being responsive to new line spacing. You know, each stand has in many cases, has a chalked out 6-foot space for any lines that form so that people are not lining up like sardines shoulder to shoulder like they would normally, but that they're separating themselves significantly that way. And people are thankful and are following those guidelines and responding very well that this resource that's been around for 50 years remains open and that we're really going above and beyond to ensure people's protection.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a lot of work on your end, just kind of reorganizing all the systems and implementing it. And I mean, you must be working a lot of hours to put all these new systems into place really quickly, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Certainly, I'm not going to take credit here. Kudos go to our Green Market Director, Michael Hurwitz, and our two assistant directors, Liz Carollo and Cheryl Huber, our operations staff led by TK, and the rest of the regional coordinator team at Farmers Markets, who have been working 12 to 14 hour days, if not longer, all weekend to completely reorient markets, to send out notices to our customer base that we are still open and that people can come and shop in a safe way. But like you said at the top of the call, I mean, we're troubleshooting, we're learning as we go, we're finding best practices quickly because we're running a lot of market days and we learn very quick. But yeah, it's been a huge amount of work, and you know, it's calling on the passion of I think why a lot of people work at Grow NYC to begin with, because they really care about this and they're super responsive, and it's been really amazing to work in an organization that's been able to so quickly and nimbly respond to this going forward.
Yeah, that's great. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to you more about the Farmer Assistance Program and what's happening there. We'll be right back.
Restaurants employ over 15 million people nationwide, and two-thirds of all restaurants are independently owned and not part of big chains. Yet, currently, these small businesses are not represented in government relief negotiations. ROAR is working to change that by fighting for relief opportunities for all restaurants. ROAR is advocating for an 8-point plan in New York State that will allow restaurants to reopen and rehire when the time comes. Dozens of industry leaders have signed onto this plan, like Namwa Tea Parlor, Field Trip, Momofuku, and many more of your favorites. You can join them at change.org by searching for ROAR, Relief Opportunities for All Restaurants.
All right, this is Lisa Held. You're listening to The Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm here with Chris from Grow NYC. Before the break, we were talking about green markets in New York City and how they're staying open and how they've been adapting to COVID-19. Chris, you really gave me a lot of great information on what's happening at the market level, but I know that you're really focused on farmer assistance. A program that used to be called Farm Roots, and you just told me the name has been changed. Can you give listeners a little bit of background on what that program is? Like, what does farmer assistance mean at a place like Grow NYC?
Sure. 20 years ago, we started a beginning farmer program exclusively focused on supporting immigrant farmers and helping them start farm businesses in the Northeast. For 11 years, we ran that program and helped start close to 65 immigrant-owned farm businesses made a name for ourselves and got good at what we did. In 2011, sent out a broader survey to our green market community and asked them what their needs were at market, what were their goals, and, you know, what were the things that kept them up at night. We had great response, and people said a lot of things, but one of the big things they said was, I'm planning to retire in the next few years, and I have no identified successor for my farm business. So in 2011, we expanded our program beyond just the immigrant beginning farmer program to support the broader green market community with agricultural business technical assistance. So all 220 or so farmers who sell through the green market now have access to a suite of business development and business technical assistance support to help run profitable and sustainable farm businesses. And that looks like a three-legged stool. It's our beginning farmer program, which is, as I said, is 20 years old, still focuses on marginalized communities and helping them start farm businesses, but now wraps in a land succession and legal support program, which helps producers through the process of retirement and the process of retirement that ensures that their business remains in agriculture in many cases can be passed down to a new generation of farmers. And then also our strategic marketing program, which provides producers with a range of different programming to help them develop new market channels, increase their total gross revenues, and access markets that best fit their business. And just like everybody else, things have changed for us. We 3 weeks ago now, put a stop to all in-person meetings, which, as you can imagine, as a technical assistance team, we love being at farm tables and on farms and at markets, working directly with producers. That's one of the best ways for us to get our skill set across and to help introduce people to new concepts and pass along our information. But so that stopped. And what's great is all the range of tools that can still be utilized to work with producers. So our beginning farmer program, I know, did like a virtual land walk with one of our beginning farmers to do a quick land assessment for a property she was considering renting for this year. Our attorney, staff attorney, Jack Hornicle, has been, on the phone and over email, been providing support on land succession and LLC creation and various other things for producers just over the phone. And then Eric Hassard, our strategic marketing manager, has been helping producers start doing online sales and pre-ordering systems. So one of the big ways we see folks, farmers, being able to respond to this is to find ways to limit the exposure at market by having people pre-order. So if you're at home, you can say, I want 2 pounds of apples, 10 pounds of potatoes and 2 pounds of carrots. And that bag can be ordered the day before, pre-packed, and be available for pickup at the market without any exchange of money or anything that way. So Eric and myself and a couple software developers that we're working with have started to onboard folks onto systems where they can make those pre-orders happen. I think pretty much everybody in the farm community has developed or expanded their either online presence or pre-ordering presence or on-farm pickup or delivery system going forward. And that's just out of necessity. The food is still being grown and people still need the food and want the food. We're just figuring out new ways to get the food from the farm to people who want it in a way that limits exposure to the coronavirus.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that online shift has been incredible to see, and to see how farmers are making that change so quickly. Like, I mean, I've just been hearing from so many people that are saying, we had all these restaurant clients, they're gone. So we set up a CSA. Now we're doing home delivery. Like we said, it's like the kind of business planning you would normally do months before, it's almost harvest time and you would be figuring out your marketing strategies. And it's sort of like, well, we just have to kind of throw all of that out the window and start over. But it does seem like the shift to online sales is going to be a big one.
Yeah.
And So you're kind of like shifting your operations in terms of how you assist and train farmers, like doing these virtual land walks and helping them over the phone. In terms of what you're hearing from farmers about like what they need or how they're being affected by COVID, like other than moving things online, is there anything else you're hearing from the growers themselves about how they're doing and how they've been affected by this whole situation?
Yeah, well, look, we lost restaurants as a buyer and we lost institutions as a buyer for farm businesses. And for many growers, that's a significant portion of their sales and their marketing channels. If you add in, you know, in some cases, slower market days, farmers absolutely are taking a hit throughout this process. And that's going to be it's going to be a struggle this year. There's new realities out there, but I think farmers never get enough credit for how nimble and intelligent and flexible they are. The same type of thinking that can create you know, the type of production innovations that you see on farms, the remanufacturing of tools and resources to make them efficient for your individual farm business is the same type of thinking that these farmers are now applying to their markets. And that looks like, you know, additional collaboration with other farms to feed growing demand for CSA numbers. It looks like shared logistics or shared routes down to new markets that are developing. It looks like a proliferation of, you know, online sales platforms and people sending food to aggregation points and getting that food to those buyers at the same time. So there's going to be a turning of the industry ship, if you will. But I have confidence that our growers, who are just incredible people across the board, are going to make that shift and find ways to get food to people. And as much as we can support them from the technical assistance side, that's why we're here.
Yeah. And, you know, there's this thing I've been hearing from a lot of farmers and people who work in regional local food distribution that, you know, maybe this moment will get more people interested in local food because it's sort of shining a light on the potential downsides of relying on a global supply chain. What do you think? Are you hearing that from New Yorkers? Do you see this as kind of a moment that could shift the way people think about local food more in the future?
I think I think that's a nice thought, and I certainly hope so. I know that people are getting new customers, and that hopefully those are long serving and loyal customers of local farmers and local food systems. When folks think back on this crisis, they're going to remember who was there providing food for them. That memory will stay for a long time, directly adjacent to the stress and the anxiety. But the hope that I think that local farmers have brought to a regional marketplace will forever be imprinted in people's minds throughout this. And I hope that manifests in people understanding. You know, I think what all of us at Grow NYC and all of us kind of in the local food system have known for so long is that this food is here and it's available and it's fresh and local and in many cases more delicious than other food.
Right.
and at the same time, there are farm businesses, very few farm businesses, where people are making a lot of money doing this. If we can put more focus on regional food systems after this, it'll be a significant silver lining of this whole disaster. That way, I do want to add though that there's a portion of our agricultural workforce that is left out of a lot of these conversations, and I want to make sure I bring this up that there's a farm worker audience out here that in many cases predominantly Spanish speaking, does not have the same access to resources, in a lot of ways have been left out of a lot of this early guidance that's come out to help people shift. And I think it's I think it's a dramatic oversight and something that has to be changed very soon. When you look at the agricultural workforce of the United States, local food system or conventional food system across the range, we're looking at a workforce that's predominantly Latino or immigrant, and those are the people in many ways that are growing, raising, producing our food. And I haven't seen the amount of resources and the amount of engagement of that audience around COVID, coronavirus, the safety impacts, the need for new practices to be implemented on farms to ensure that those people are safe. These are our highest risk populations. These are folks without health insurance who are often not speaking the language, and then who are not being provided information in an effective way in their language that they can quickly summarize, understand, and implement on the farm. So I just encourage agriculture employers, organizations generally, to be taking proactive steps to ensure that the safety of their farm workers, and making sure that our federal agencies and our local agencies and that our technical assistance providers are thinking to those populations as well as we offer technical assistance and support.
Yeah, no, that's so important. And I think, a lot of the farm workers you're talking about are, undocumented or part of guest worker programs. And, not only are they potentially left out of conversations about safety, but they're also not going to benefit from many of the policy changes that are, the boosts in unemployment, for instance, or, some of the programs that are being passed to help workers, they're not going to benefit from at all.
That's exactly right. And I think it's a time where we need our philanthropic and foundational, support to step up and to understand that, this is a time where our most vulnerable, yet again, are at the highest risk, and they will be the first and the hardest to be impacted by this. And we need support and resources to be going to both the farm side of that, which is your farm workers, your farm owners who are not predominantly English speaking, or who might not have access, like you said, to some of the larger federal resources. But then on the flip side, also on the consumer side, right? The first place mm-hmm. where food access can dry up is low income neighborhoods. And I really respect the folks who are out there trying to solve that food access issue, because again, those are the people that will find it harder to find fresh vegetables faster than anyone else. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time and for all of your work getting fresh food to people all over New York.
My pleasure. Thanks for the time talking to me, Lisa. And I think this is a critical moment for the local food system, and looking forward to seeing how it all unfolds.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for listening to the Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. If you enjoyed the conversation, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and share it. I'll see you next week. Take care. The Farm Report is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Just enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like,
tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.